This episode of the Cutting Edge Podcast is brought to you by GlassGadget.com. Showcase Innovations creates tools that help shower door installers be more efficient and save time. Check out GlassGadget.com for more information. Hey, welcome back. It's Wednesday. Check it out. We are live with the Facebook professionals. Look who I've got here. I have Shannon. She's my visitor today in my tiny little office here that's barely big enough for me. I was like, do you want to be in the next room or do you want to squeeze into my little office and do the live stream? She was like, I'll do whatever.
What was the chance she checked out the gaps on your glass door behind you as she came through?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's not going to be any water leaking, so we should be fine.
I used a lot of silicone in there, so.
I don't know what kind of hinges these are, actually.
Those are Zurich hinges.
Oh, yeah.
Swiss. The Swiss.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, glad you could join us, doing our regular thing for the most part, except I have a guest. So if you are in the Facebook group just watching us, you are wondering how to get in here. How do I get in there? You can just click on the link that is in the description and it will let you come in. I even put the password in there. So like if it asks you for a password, you've got it. Try to think of everything, you know? Glad that you're here. I see Christina's with us. She looks like she's driving home. I wonder if she would like to talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the co-op. What's up, Christina?
Hi, I am driving. I think I'm committing a crime technically, but my eyes are on the road. And anyway, we'll talk about the co-op real quick. We have an awesome meeting this week with the steering committee. We're kind of calling ourselves. It was awesome. We have a guest. His name is Stephen Irvin, and he is all about all things cooperatives. He started, or he was one of the founders, I guess, of the Amicus Solar Cooperative, which is a purchasing cooperative in the solar panel industry, and they started to compete against companies like Tesla, which, you know, don't necessarily have to make a ton of profit on solar panels and things like that, and can really even take losses to kill their competition. So they had to do something, and they started a purchasing co-op to compete with bigger solar panel companies. Anyway, Stephen is now a full-time employee of Amicus Cooperative, and they have 80 members. It's wholly member-owned, and they're very selective. He had a lot to say about the selection process, a lot to say about dues and how membership works, what it takes to become a member, how members are vetted. He had a lot to say, too, about the merits of purchasing and how to prove that, when people buy into the cooperative as a member, I mean, we're going into business together. It's not just an association. It's a bigger deal, and there's something to be said for that. So people really need to participate in some ways, and our plan is to make that really easy for people because I know we're all already overwhelmed in our jobs. And if you're not, then kudos to you. I don't know what else I've missed, but we are making so much progress. I know Billy Britt had a meeting today with an Amicus Solar Cooperative member. And so we'll hear from him next week or some notes from him later this week and get more about that and what it's like to be a member from their side. And yeah, did I miss anything, Chris? Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I was just thinking as you were talking about just how eye-opening it was just having him as a guest and hearing what he had to say about it and just some things that we really hadn't considered, I think, just a whole nother, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, what the scope of this thing might be and how we might benefit from it. But I don't think we've even really scratched the surface. So we've got a lot more to talk about and a lot more to explore. But I think this thing is definitely going forward. I mean, it's got some inertia now. So I don't think you could stop it if you tried at this point. So it's pretty exciting stuff. Thanks so much for all the work you do, Christina. I mean, you really are bringing some leadership, much needed leadership to it. And everybody that's involved, we've got such a great team. I mean, it's, what can I say? I'm partial.
Thanks, Chris. It's fun. We're having fun. But yeah, this guy is such a gold mine of information. He has so much amazing experience. And I just sat on that call like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm taking notes in a college class again. Like I am scribbling down so fast. I can hardly hear what he's saying and like retain information. And it was awesome. I mean, he talked about everything and how money is split and why it's split that certain way and what tax documents everything has to go to, and just, I mean, he just has it all down to a science at this point. He started, I think he said, 4 cooperatives, and he also helps to advise people on how to turn their existing businesses into member-owned cooperatives, employee-owned, member-owned cooperatives as an exit strategy. So if anybody ever wanted his information, maybe to reach out to him about any kind of exit planning like that, I'd be happy to get you his information. And he's such a nice guy. I hate to like offer his services or anything, but he was like so happy to help. And anyway, we're very lucky.
He's a co-op geek. We're like so happy to help. I mean, totally, you know, you can tell he's all nerded out on it, you know? So it's something he's done it this bunch of times. And so he really has the inside scoop. So I was thinking about the possibility of maybe having him come on here as a guest and just talk to everybody.
I think that's a great idea. I think we might have an echo, but I do think that's a great idea, and we can flip that to him maybe on our meeting next week. But man, we are getting really lucky. I'm getting a little nervous. It's so cool, but it's like, oh, it's a lot. But it's really fun. So yeah, if anybody has questions or wants to chat about it, just let me know, and we'll be coming out with more information soon. So awesome. That's all I've got. I do have to leave a little early today, unfortunately, but it's nice to see you all every week.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks so much. Muchas gracias. So hey, yeah, so at the end of the last meeting call, we just started talking a little bit about how to respond to people, potential customers, prospects, whatever you call them, when they say, your price is kind of high. I promised that I would bring that up as the topic this week. I think that's a great topic to explore. There's a lot of different kind of versions of that. Of what people might say. They might say, oh yeah, the other guy is cheaper, or they might say, is that the best price, you know, you can do, or can I get a discount because I'm a, I don't know, senior citizen or something. God, we're all senior citizens, you know? Give you a discount for that. But anyways, I'd be really interested in hearing some of your guys's, first of all, versions of that question. What have you heard? And then second, like, how do you answer that? Do you have like kind of a pat response that you come back with when somebody challenges your prices? Tell me.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, come on
in. I like I'll get to butt in here this way. So I listened to that call actually on the way down here, and I think it was Brian brought it up, and I was going, oh, I want to text Brian and tell him whenever I hear that question, the way I reframe it in my mind is the customer is saying, I got 2 quotes, yours is higher, but I'm calling to ask you to tell me why I should hire you. because otherwise they wouldn't even call. I mean, if they got a different price and they wanted to go with a better price and they wanted to go with that guy, they'd just go with that guy and they wouldn't even call you. So I always try and start it that way and go, they're not being combative. They're saying, give me a good reason that I can, you know, make it make sense to me to go forward with you, who I want to. Otherwise, why would I call?
That's a great
thing. So I start.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thought. I guess consciously, I never really think of it that way in the moment. Hindsight, 2020. And how do you initiate that communication between you and a potential customer?
Well, I guess they initiate it, and then I've had some conversations with people, and maybe I'll change when the economy goes down, but I never ever lower the price. I always just say, well, we can talk about at first. Number one, let's make sure that we're looking apples to apples. So, you know, I quoted this as, you know, as clips and satin nickel, and the other guy did channel and brush nickel, and, you know, sometimes stuff like that. Mine's extra tall, theirs is shorter. So first I try and go over that stuff. And then second, I say, you know, this is what we know that we need to charge in order to stay in business, provide the warranty that we provide, continue to do high quality work. Different companies establish their company in different ways. Some people want to sell lots of showers at a very cheap price. We like to sell a very few showers at, you know, a higher price, but we take care of our customers forever when it comes to the installation craftsmanship. And this is what it takes to do that for you long term. That's what I like to do. And in the back of my mind, if it's way cheaper, I want my competitor to get that job so that they can go under really quickly or figure it out really quickly. I want that guy to get the job at, you know, $300 for the $800 panel, whatever someone said. Jeez, yeah. Take it. Take them all. Do, you know, just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bury yourself quick.
I would ask the customer what's important. What's important to you? Is it the price? Is the price the most important thing? Is it the quality? Is it the service? Is it the customer experience? Is it the brand? Is it the, what is it? What's important to you? Let them tell you what's important. And then you're not so much playing defense and say, I'm doing this and we can do this, we can do that. You are literally answering their questions. If the quality, you know, you can, if they mention quality or the warranty or whatever, I mean, if they mention price, you know, they probably wouldn't even made that phone call. So they're like Shannon said, they're literally asking you why, and then you ask them what's important, and then you can address it one at a time or whatever. And you could say, look at our reviews online. We have countless customers saying about our experience, about this quality or whatever. So I would just ask them what's important to you. Is price the most important thing, or is there something else that we can talk about? Let them put it in their ball, put it in their foot.
And in relation to that, I appreciate what I'm hearing thus far. Let me ask this. I'm gonna kind of go on a sidetrack, but like, for you guys, do you find that most of your customers are willing to communicate via phone call as opposed to text? Like, I get a lot of people that communicate only via email or text. And when I'll try to make a phone call out, I often get no answer, but I will get a text right back. So that offers a challenge in the communication between myself and the customer. If they're not looking to speak to me on the phone, it becomes pretty difficult to communicate some of these things, I feel, via text message. Do you guys find the same, or like, do your customers pick up the phone? Do they call you to talk to you kind of voice to voice?
I think we all kind of fight with that. I actually started asking, is there a good time that we could talk? Sometimes people are busy. They're at work. They're, you know, just asking questions is literally like the best thing. Is there a time that we can set aside that you have free that we can just have like a 10-minute phone call and go over this kind of stuff. And I have a, I have a link on my website. If you just go to meet.idealshadows.com, you can schedule a phone call with the salespeople. So it plugs into it's linked to their calendars. You can go in and literally schedule a phone call. Rob can set that up.
And that's something you can that's something you can text to somebody. You know,
yeah,
right.
Your text, yeah, you can text them the link, right?
Yeah,
so yeah. We have it as a, we just have it as a template. We're just like,
I would do both. Like we text them so we can call them. So we try to hit them through all the channels and identify what's their preference, because there's no preference that'll fit all. And sometimes they need to be texted or emailed about the phone call they should be expecting, because their preference is to ignore all calls. So letting them know via text, they might, if they're a text primary person, then just let them know when is a good time for the phone call. Hey, when can I call you? Hey, this would be better done over a phone call. What's the best time so that we can answer this for everyone that needs to hear? Because usually it's multiple people going back and forth on their side that, whether it's contractor, builder, or husband and wife, they need to get on the same page before they can actually make a decision with you. So pushing that on their calendar, and the book a call thing that Mike has, I love that. Giving them the option to book the call if you have the availability to do that. So we do the combination of, that usually helps.
We actually set it up on our website. So when you do go, like when you go through our Google landing page or whatever landing page, instead of just going say thank you, like what the hell good is that, like thank you, it actually goes to the meeting page, so they, it gives them the option after they just submitted the form for us to contact them, it gives them the option to set up to schedule a phone call with them. Because I don't know, a thank you landing page is thank you, that's it, but this was another option. So I find people go through, put in their all the information. And then some, not all of them do it, but some will book the call right there. So, and then we make it, and then we hook up with them at that time. So that works too. And our landing page, going back to what Shannon was talking about, it actually asks, we actually ask the customer what's important to them after, because it gets, I feel like it gets their brain thinking like, all right, I'm looking for a quote from these people. And they're asking me like from the get-go, what's important to me. And there's little check, there's check boxes, quality, brand, review, you know, blah, 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 warranty, all that stuff. So when we get that email and we have the initial conversation with the customer, we say, you know, I see that you kind of checked off that quality is, you know, they, everybody, you know, most people check off pricing along with other stuff, but I think they just feel like they have to. But that gives us kind of an open door to discuss the other things that they checked off. That seems to work too.
All right.
Hey, so I'm curious, Billy Britt, are you still on here? I'm curious how Billy handles these things, because he does so many quotes, like just through email or phone calls, and, you know, less of that personal conversation where I feel like you can get that rapport. Did Billy go away?
I'm not sure he's here somewhere. Let me see.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm Billy. What's going on, Billy?
Sorry, well, guys. Put you on the.
No, I mean, it's some of it can be less personal. I've always had the stance that text messaging is extremely personal. You're talking to the thing that people have on their body all the time. That's like a piece of them at this point in life. So I don't feel that it's as impersonal as it used to be, or as people think it is. I mean, my personal cell phone number is something that I don't give out a lot. So I look at it a little bit differently, but how do we handle it? We still want phone calls and love phone calls. The issue I have is teaching somebody probably 30 and under that is still important and needs to be done, instead of texting back and forth. Once you're, you know, 20 text message deep, we probably should have made a call at 10. So that can be difficult to get across. But it's trying to find a balance between that. We definitely prefer the text message. I love the communication style, because everything is noted. Everything is there in text. It can be reverted back to. So I am, like I've mentioned before, I am kind of, I like it. So I like to push it. But we still have conversations with our sales team that say phone calls are still extremely important. So we can't just ignore that fact. If you start to feel that the text message communication isn't going well, ask them, can we get on a phone call and turn the tide on that. So it's an open conversation with our team that is still a viable way. Email, I'll be honest, in the sales portion, our digital sales, we've almost moved away from email completely.
Yeah,
it's too slow. Really, the only time we get into it is when we have multi-unit contracts that need to get out and be approved that can't be done via text. So that's really the only place we've used email at this point. But it's still the phone calls are still very viable. I was raised old school in the sales game, so I was making phone calls. You know, I was on 30, 40 phone calls a day for years with customers and manufacturers. But I don't know. We don't get a lot of kickback, it seems like. Now, I'm not in the day-to-day sales. I have a team that's doing the digital sales, but we don't seem to get a lot of flack. A lot of people love the fact that it's quick. We give them good information, which you have to do. You have to be set up to give them the right information and ask the right questions to get it done that way. And if you don't, they can quickly tell you don't know what you're doing. So we monitor that pretty heavy, that we're following procedure with each customer. And if it doesn't follow procedure, get on the phone and get them the information they need or the information we need. So.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that you don't get that much pushback. I mean, that's pretty much my experience too. And I know that we're not the lowest priced shop around. I don't think we're the highest either, but occasionally someone will say, oh yeah, your price is too high. I found a lower price. But as a percentage of the number of prospects that we go through, probably one in 20 or something like that will push back on the price. And then we can still convert probably half of those. Because like Shannon was saying, you know, I mean, they're calling you to say, hey, yeah, your price was higher. I mean, why are you even calling me if, like, unless you want me to convince you? And I think a lot of times people deep down, they know it's like, why is this guy's price so low? Is that a good thing? Should I trust that? And they're really looking to you as a professional. And if you presented yourself as the, I don't want to say more expensive, but maybe, you know, more professional, more competent contractor or whatever. I mean, they're looking to you as a professional. Hey, explain to me, you know, what's going on. And it's easy to say, well, I mean, what do you want me to not do? You know, I'm in order to lower your price. I mean, what do you want me to leave off? Because I can't do everything that needs to be done at the and charge a price that's lower than what I'm offering.
Chris, are you saying that your closing ratio is like above 90%?
Oh, no. No. But the jobs we're not closing is not because of price. Or at least that's not what's being reported to us. I mean, maybe people are finding a lower price and not getting back to us at all. Because they, like, you know, like Shannon was saying, they found a lower price, they just went with it. But I'm saying of the people who say your price is too high or your price is higher, it's a very small percentage.
Okay.
Do you follow what I'm saying? I mean,
there may be
more people who think that, but they're not saying that. And then if the ones that do, we can close, I'd say 50% of those. I've had a lot of customers say you are the highest price, and we're going with you. I've heard that many, many times.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about your demographic.
What's that?
Sorry, Brad. Go ahead.
No. Well, I was going to say, you know, some of it's demographics and it, to some degree. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't do all the sales as much as I used to, although I'm doing a lot right now because my guy is out. But it seems like we do have some ethnicities that their culture is one of bargaining. And so I always kind of know that might happen going in, and I kind of prepare myself for that. And I just know that if you are real firm sometimes, you know, and I do go down on my price sometimes. I think we've become kind of one of the highest priced in the market, I think. But, you know, I allow myself a little wiggle room to come down, and then I'm very firm about where I settle, and it seems to work well. And if somebody says somebody else came in, you know, $300 or $400 or $500 cheaper, you know, I want to see that, but I'm willing to lose it. Just like Shannon said, I'm willing to lose that and give it away, you know, and just kind of support the quality that we stand for, you know, and most of what we do is going to be FHC or Sierra Lawrence, you know, it's going to be quality stuff. I had one today that was kind of a good point to make. The shower I had, it was just a straight across deal, you know, and typical of like a tub setting, except it's wider. It was 73 inches, I think. And the guy showed me what he saw at Lowe's. And of course, he said, this is what I like. And of course, the prices are on it and everything else. So I initially, my thought was, okay, this is what his expectations on pricing are. But I didn't really get into that. I just went into a different mode and said, you know, Lowe's has ready-made doors off the shelf. They're all square. And kind of explained all that. And I said that they don't have anything that goes beyond 60 inches. So it was, you know, and the guy was totally cool about it. He said he wanted quality. He wanted something that fit right and all those things. So, you know, it seems like it's not really going to be a price thing. I'm interested. I think I'll get the order on this. But I'm providing two nice options for it. But going in, and he's watching me do the measuring with the lasers and everything. We all have talked about that before. But I think that all adds the value. So, you know, I did set right up front. I told him that this is going to be, you know, significantly more expensive because it's all custom and that I use high-end hardware. So that's, you know, how I'm selling that job. So but I've had a lot of situations where somebody says I'm a little higher, they either go with us or they try to get me to come down. And one of the other things I do is try to upgrade them to more product. Like if we didn't quote them low iron, or we didn't quote them Enduro Shield or whatever, I offer an upgrade at a discount. So I keep my profit dollars strong on my shower that I quoted, but give them something of value at a discount. So I don't know if anybody tries anything like that.
Yeah, would you like fries with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we do try that, and it works great. That's a great strategy, Brad. Like when you know you're walking into a situation where someone's going to want some sort of discount, already having some extra thing you offer that is easy for you to put on there without upsetting your numbers too much. It's one of those after product things. But yeah, that's a great strategy for everyone to have in their pocket in case the person has to feel like they won. Because some people do. They have to haggle and they have to feel like they got at least $10 less on you. So find some wiggle room for $20 before you walk in the door and always have that ready so they could feel like they were the special one. And for pricing, like we never try to talk down about anyone else's services because their rebuttals are always about who's cheaper, who's faster, who's this. We just always try to highlight what we do offer. We offer great products, great vendors, great materials, great craftsmanship, and a lifetime craftsmanship warranty for the products that they choose. And anything else, we're going to be here in 5 years when you call us for your next job. I don't know if they're going to be, but look at those things before they move forward. And then we try to send them a brochure or some tips, or depending on what stage they're on, we try to send them in a direction where they can be educated to make sure they're making the right choice for their contractor or their project. We try to highlight things that have went wrong for others, that here's some guidelines, glad to hear you're going in a different direction, here's something you can use along your way. And they might actually end up coming back to you when they realize the other person isn't following the best practices.
Yeah, good point, good point. So what are some of the things that you guys are hearing in regards to price? I mean, how do they put it to you? What questions are they asking, or what statements are they making to indicate to you that price is a factor?
I get, the tile guy told me he had a friend that could do it. Especially if I pay him cash, I get that. I get the guy down the street said that you don't need to do this. I can do it my way and it'll save you a lot of money. You don't need to cut the glass out of square. They can just simply put the gaskets on it and that'll save you a lot of money. So those are the common ones. You know, I didn't answer the initial question, but Mike and I are very much on the same page there about asking the customer what's important to them. The way Keith phrases it, that he wants always to acknowledge, let the customer know that you've heard his feeling, his objection. So you would respond with something like, sounds like price is an important thing to you. And then they're generally going to come back to, no, no, that's not it. Because it's going to almost make it sound like they're a cheapskate. So it says, you know, sounds like price is important, more important than the quality or the time frame or the customer service. Am I right? And I mean, they back themselves into a corner at that point. Then they'll start backstepping. So that's a great comeback. Just make them know that you've heard their objection. Sounds like this is more important. And they'll get, what do you mean more important? Well, you know, you've got your quality, you've got your time frame, you've got all sorts of things that are important. But right now, price is important. And if it's truly important, you could go to the big box store because they're way less than us. No, no, I don't want to do that. And all of a sudden, they end up selling themselves. But the other thing that we found over the years is when you start, and we talked about this in the past, Chris, is you have your own brand. Because your immediate rebuttal, Brian, you could say is, well, what are you getting for that? What brand are they selling? And you know, 90% of the shower door guys don't have a brand. And say, well, it's Sierra Lawrence hinges, it's this glass, it's this and this. Say, okay, but what brand is that? That's like saying I bought a Chevy, it's body by Fisher and Delco, you know, radios, and basically they're putting together a door for you, right? You're not really buying a brand. Then it'll start clicking. If you're giving them an analogy of something else that makes sense, the car industry is a great analogy. It's a great analogy to use. So
I don't understand then, how do you describe your brand then? Because then that's the next.
Because it is our hinges. It is our glass. I'm not ordering a C.R. Lawrence. So we call our pivot door the My Pivot. That's the brand, the My Pivot. The slide is the My Slide. But it's our extrusions. I'm not buying a Sierra Lawrence kit. I'm not doing the, I don't really even know their names. It's just, you know, we have a My Glide, which is the bar, the barn style door, or the My Slide, which is what most guys call a semi-frameless slider. But we have doors named for each particular thing. So at least the customer knows what brand they're getting. So that if they put the door in a year later, they're going to remember, oh, it's easy. My Glide, oh, that's my shower door. They know what customer or what vendor they dealt with. So by creating a brand, you create the value right off the bat. And a lot of people come to you because of that. You've been here a long time. Like Mike referred to, you got great Google reviews. Those are really important because the lowest price guy, the reason he's low is he really needs your business. And is he going to be there when you want him to be there? Because maybe he's just going to take your deposit and never see him again. you just got to plant that seed without sounding cocky. Like Robert says, you don't want to down the other guys, but you want to plant the seed. Like Keith always says, the biggest thing in sales is their fear of loss. They're afraid to make a decision to pay more because they're afraid they're going to lose something. So you have to settle their fear and let them know that you're listening to their objection and can answer it and handle their objection. And that's the biggest thing. And I agree with you, Shannon. You don't have to drop your price at all. Because if the guy says, well, the guy can do that, you say, oh, so you want me to match his price? Let me ask you, are they going to match my quality? And just wait. He'll say, well, I don't know. So, okay, well, that's an important thing too.
But now, from what you said, I'm going to respond with, ooh, I can tell they really need your business. That's totally going to be my response.
No, and then that response would be, I feel strong enough that you should have our business. I feel that strong about it for you. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to get on the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would be my response. I feel so passionate about it. And I speak so strongly about it because I don't want you to make the wrong decision. It's a lot of money and you hate to do it over.
No, so true.
I'm not afraid of those objections. That's good. If you can get them to start an open dialogue, that's good, because most people have their wall up and they're just giving you very short answers and very short responses. Once you get into that dialogue and they understand that you're passionate about your job and your business, you understand it, price isn't the first objection. It's the first thing that people say, but it's not really their fear. Their fear is, are they going to get the job done or are they going to be happy? That's it. Price is an easy thing. I mean, you do it in a car dealership, even yourself. If you're going to buy a car, you know what car you want. That's why you went there. If you want a Mercedes, you're going in there. Yeah, you're going to try and get some money off. And if you don't, you're still going to buy it. That's what you want.
I mean, the thing is that people think that the money is a variable, but the quality is not. They assume that the quality is going to be the same and the customer service is going to be the same across the board with all of the different vendors that they talk to. And so the only variable in their mind is price.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's a variable because all the other things change, right? And so like you guys are saying, you have to convince them, or not convince them, you have to prove to them, I guess, that the quality, the price is there because the quality is there, because the warranty is there, because the customer service is there. And we've been there, we've got the experience, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. You know, I say using the automobile industry is a great analogy. Think about when you bought a car and you paid a lot of money for that car and you really like it. Now you got to go back for service and they treat you like crap or they don't answer the phone. Nobody calls your salesman. He already got his commission. He doesn't care. Same thing in the shower door. And most glass shops don't respond well to phone calls. Very poor on customer service after the job is done, after the check is cleared. Getting them back to adjust a sweep or answer a question. I hear it all the time. Hey, can you do this for my door? My guy, he's a no-show. He's ghosted me. He's not answering the phone. Yeah, I hear it all the time. So, you know, we're acting as professionals in this group. That's why we're on here every single week. But that's what we bring to the table. You know, we bring that professionalism and there's a price for that. You know, the amount of money that we spend for training our people, insuring our people, everything that goes along with it is very important. And there's a price to go along with it. Yeah. But like Shannon was saying, I don't mind those rebuttals at all. Actually, I look forward to it because it's starting to open up that conversation. Because the guy could just take what I'm saying and shake his head and walk out the door and under his breath say exactly what Shannon was saying. Oh, he's just saying it because he needs the job. But if he starts that open discussion, that's good. That's a good thing. But
I have a question, Bill. You brought up people being there for the service afterwards and people getting ghosted by their other contractors. I'm just curious how many of you guys will actually do those services. And we just stay away from them. We don't want to touch them, but I got to think somebody's going to do it somewhere for some reason.
You touch it, you want it.
Depends on how slow it is at the time.
Depends what it is, who it is, what the need is. You know, there's a lot of variables there, but for the most part, you're exactly right. You know, you made a choice, and you know, we did one yesterday for somebody, and he just needed gaskets repaired. He had a steam shower. He sent me a video. The sweep was ripped off the bottom and it was falling off the door. He wanted someone to put new sweeps on. I looked. I had a guy two blocks away doing an installation. He was finishing up. I said, how about if I get a guy there in an hour? Said, oh my God. And we did it, and I didn't charge him. He says, oh, come on, you got to charge me. That's great. I said, just write a review for us. That'll help us a lot. Tell everybody you know, and that's all that I care about. Now, normally I wouldn't have touched it. I got the video. It wasn't our door. Normally I wouldn't have touched it because I particularly knew who this guy was. And he was a friend of a friend. We did it. But normally I wouldn't. Gee, Brian, I hope you're taking a lot of notes. it opened up a big can of worms. Yeah.
I really like what Brian Gerd said there a few minutes ago. You know, I never heard it put quite that way about, yeah, you think that quality is a constant, and the price is the variable, but it's like all those things can vary. And that's really a pretty brilliant point, because I think you're right. I think that is how people imagine it. And I think a lot of times price is just the thing that people feel like they need to bring up. Almost like what Bill was talking about, like you go to the car dealership. I mean, I'm not a wheeler dealer kind of guy. I mean, it's like, if I can't afford it, I just don't want it. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah, whatever. I can't afford that. But when I go to buy a car, I will try to get a little shaved off, because I know that they've got room, and I know that they've priced it that way. And I feel like I'd be a dunce if I didn't say, okay, so what can you, you know? And, you know, I get a little bit shaved off, but that's pretty much the only place I will ever do that. And it's almost like, it's more like something that I feel like I'm expected to do. And I wonder how many customers just feel that way in every transaction. Like, oh man, I need to try to get a little bit shaved off, and I got to bring up the price, you know, or else people think I'm stupid or something.
Chris, that's a great point.
This way too. Go ahead, Bill.
I was saying, Chris, that's a great point, because don't forget the glass guys are right at the end of the project. They probably beat everybody up in the meantime. They beat up the carpenter, beat up the tile guy, beat up this one, beat up that one. You're the last one. It's like, they all did it because either I paid them cash and they're happy as a pig in crap, or, you know, they paid their contractor off, whatever it is. So you're at the end of the game, and they figure they've done it with everybody else. Probably try it with you too.
Why not?
Using your analogy, Chris, if you go to the car dealership, yes, you're going to haggle on price. What if you changed it up and you went in and haggled on quality? Nobody's going to do that. Mm. What if you went in and haggled on customer service?
How can
service?
You improve the quality on this one, you know?
How can you give me lower quality?
Yeah.
Right? Nobody's going to
lower the
nobody's
quality
gonna,
on this. You can get
right. Or give me less customer service, or give it to me in a month instead of a week. Nobody's going to haggle on those things. They're only going to haggle on price. They might haggle on time just to get a lower price, but nobody's going to haggle on anything but price usually.
Right.
Because that's the one thing that they think is the variable, like we talked about before, and not the other things that create the price variable.
And there's other things you can do, just like, trying to remember who it was. Oh, Brad said that, you know, you go into that house prepared that you have some upgrades that you can discount. And you can get it in quicker for them. You know, how soon do you have to have it? let him commit that he needs to buy a door, first of all, and find out what his time frame is. What's his expectations? What else do you need to have? And start letting them pick the menu. Before you know it, again, they back themselves into the corner where they're ready to give you the orders to get started. Because 90% of the time, the last thing you want to do is get another guy to come in your house and go through the whole thing again. I know when I get somebody at my house, you know, I'll do it once, and if I have that good gut feeling that it's going to work, I don't shop. I don't get four other guys so I can leave work and come back every time and go through the same thing with another guy. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's textbook closing technique, right? Is like just asking those closing questions, like, when do you need it? You know, it takes a little while to learn it, but when somebody asks you, can I get it in brushed nickel? You don't say, yes, you can get it in brushed nickel. When someone asks you, can I get
it
in
brushed
nickel? Do you want it in brushed nickel?
Is that the way you want it? Is that the way you need it?
Then you're giving them the opportunity to say yes. You don't want them to say yes, right?
Yeah.
So
I like using the terms. Is that the way you need it? And you keep using the word need. Ooh. And you're filling the need, you know? They'll say, what's your lead time? How soon do you need it?
How soon do you need it?
And again, it pins them right to the wall.
Hmm.
Unless he says, oh, no, there's no rush. Oh, good. You know, that gives us some flexibility now.
Yeah.
So you get all the scenarios. You go through the scenarios in your head. It's a good, if you have multiple salespeople, it's really good to role play those scenarios right there. So it just flies off the tongue. You know, they'll come in, hey, I just need a lower end door. I'm selling the house. I don't want anything extravagant. Say, good, you came to the right place because we have all the different lines. We'll just stay away from the half inch and let's just concentrate on 3/8. That'll keep your cost down. Still right. A nice door, but you're not going to spend the half inch price. Sorry. We don't need to go low iron and, you know, add that up. We can just stay with the generic clear glass. Say, all of a sudden, perfect. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Going back to Brian Jared's comment about price and thinking that's the only variable, to the homeowner's mind, they don't really know about the rest of it. Price is the only thing that's actually quantifiable in their mind. Mm-hmm. And we keep comparing it to automobiles, but really it's not compared to automobiles because they know exactly what a Chevy Malibu is. They don't necessarily know what a shower is. And when they go in and buy electronics, that person says, okay, here's the price for a 20 inch and here's the price for a 30 inch. Here's the price for a 50 inch. They can touch and see all these things. It's just, we're at a disadvantage because they can't understand in their mind what they're buying and why it's different. And it's just that much more of a challenge for us to quantify that for them, make it as quantifiable as the prices in their mind.
But Shannon, doing that over text or email, I agree with you, but you have an advantage. You have a showroom. You can show them the difference.
Yeah.
And you should show them the difference right there. And that's your advantage over the guys that don't have showrooms that are trying to sell it via text or email. They can come in and feel and touch and see what they're getting.
Yeah. I was also thinking to myself when at one point that at the beginning, when we're in the showroom, one of the first conversations we have with people is, you know, why do I want a frameless door? What is a frameless shower in the first place? And when we have that conversation, we say, I know you're at the end of your project and I know budgets have been pushed. They always are, but this is not the point to stop getting what you really want to make that project a success. We say that at the beginning. I'm thinking we should say it when these conversations come up too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's the finishing touch, the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you want is to put in a botched shower door after you just spent the money for the tile and you went through all those selections. That's not fun, going into a tile store, picking out all your selections, getting it installed. you know?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I go into a really nice home, really nice neighborhood. It's a beautiful place. They've got all, you know, hardwood floors. They got the granite countertops and like, and then the fixtures are all like cheap. And then they've got some cheap shower door in there or a shower curtain or something. It's like, it's obvious, you know, when they got down to the finish where they really should have saved some money because, you know, to make it pop at the very end, that's, you know, they ran out of money or they decided not to spend that. Those last few bucks that would have really made the difference, you know.
Of course.
Man.
Sometimes the builder will put in some piece of junk because it's in the contract that he needs to install a shower door.
Right.
So they'll just put in the biggest piece of crap they can find.
Yep.
And they, you know,
that happens a lot. You know?
They made the contract, but.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's perfect opportunity for people like us.
You know, if you catch somebody early enough and let's say they have the choice of using their contractor or someone else, that's a good time to try to sell them and go in direct with you. Unless you want to deal with the contractor. I mean, that's an advantage in one sense. But I tell the customer, you know, if you go with contract, if you're going through the contractor, he doesn't know all the intricacies of shower doors. He doesn't know what the options are for the hardware, for the glass, and or the layout, the design. And so, you know, I tell the customer that they are going to pretty much accept what limited knowledge the contractor has. And if he goes direct with us, we'll extend our 3-year warranty on material and labor and that sort of thing. And I try to do that because if the contractor isn't one of our customers, I want to still get that business. I still try to meet the contractor. I try to get names of contractors and call them up. But that's just one of those things. Like, you know, the home show we just did, there's a lot of people who are starting a project or 4 months out from starting a project. And that's what, you know, I talk to them about.
Yeah, without a doubt. You plant that seed early. Absolutely. But then you got to follow up on them, Brad, that whole thing before the title guy says, I know a guy. You know, you got to stay with that customer and build that relationship. If you don't stay in touch with them, good chance you're going to lose it.
That's a real good point. Yeah, that's a good point. We put in our software to follow up. You know, I think we did a pretty good job this time. Might have been a few loose ends, but we made an effort to, you know, track the customers. So
yeah, it's important to lock them in too. You can say, you know, traditionally the pricing of glass goes up in October. I don't know when your house can be ready, but if you lock it in now, you can do it. We'll just hold the price, you know, whatever you got to do.
Oh, man, I like that.
Those things happen a lot.
Traditionally, the price of glass goes up.
That's it. Traditionally, it goes up.
Traditionally, it goes up. A month after our first conversation.
Yes. Traditionally, it always goes up.
That's this group, man.
Yeah, during COVID, it went up 200% a week. You know? It was crazy. You couldn't get material and everything.
Sky's the limit.
Yeah, they had us bidding on high-rise jobs during COVID, and prices were skyrocketing. I said, well, hey, we got to have a clause in here. We got to have a clause. This is when all the glass shops are going up 35%, you know, on the wholesale end of it. Never mind the hardware.
Yeah. Amazing. Hey, Kane Anderson is in the Facebook chat and he posted this comment, best tips for networking with contractors in your area as a new shower glass company. And also how to score contracts with builders when we get to that point. I'm thinking like, man, that's a good topic. Maybe a good topic for next week. What do you guys think?
Yeah, why do all these good topics come out at 9:27? You know,
because,
three minutes to go.
Exactly. They're priming us. They're priming us for next week.
But that is a good topic.
That is a good topic. Yeah, you know, especially when you're starting out, you know, and how do you make friends?
Yeah.
Every good show ends with a cliffhanger, Chris. I think you're getting the hang of this.
Good point.
So what do you think? Any last thoughts? Anybody want to chime in who had just hasn't been able to get a word in edgewise because we're blabbering on and on?
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
All right, you guys. Thanks for joining us. Elibon, can you do something? Okay. All right. That's it.
Till next week.
All right.
Have a good one, guys.
See you guys. Bye, Shannon.
Bye, Shannon. Bye, guys.
I'll be visiting one of you next week.
Yeah.
To a screen here.
Where are you going to be next week?
You're welcome.
Good night, everybody.
Hey, this is Chris Phillips, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. You may want to join the Shower Door Professionals group on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search for Shower Door Pros, and you'll find us. I look forward to seeing you.